There is no way to be a leader in Americana except you got it.
Hardy White and Hardy White University present Lectures in Americana. A master class in your culture. The curriculum? You're soaking in it. Today's lecture, Fake Shemp, Am I Good Enough? Oh, hello, friends. Don't you feel good about yourself taking an online class? You're not just listening to some feather rambling or something. No, this is one of those so-called master class. Now, I'm not allowed to use the capital M. So apparently master has all sorts of other definitions. So this is kind of a master class. Everything is in quotes, in fact. It's implied. And I'm calling it Americana. And what's that? I don't know. I thought it was a kind of country music with sincere lyrics. But I still don't know. Maybe more electric guitars? Everything is a genre, but I don't think that's what I'm referring to exactly. I'm referring to something else. What? I don't know. We'll see at the end. It's always best to name something, then describe it, and then you say, okay, that makes sense, because the name really is meaningless, and I should have named it that. Well, welcome today for the first of what I hope is many, many lectures. And I love the word lecture because it implies that you're being scolded. And isn't that what learning really is being browbeaten? We used to learn so much more back in the day when we were literally beat your brow with things. Not heavy things. They just hit whatever they had at hand, the teacher. And sometimes it's just a cigarette, which doesn't hurt. A lit one, not a lit one. What I'm going to do is give you examples based on something that was important to me as a child. Now, let me talk just briefly, give you a history of the Three Stooges. Back in the early days of film, when film was just starting, they needed something to put on film. And so what they did is they would get some acts that had been around for a while doing live things like vaudeville. And one of the first talkies they ever had was a short film of Roy Smek, who was a vaudeville wizard of the strings. He'd play the ukulele and the banjo ukulele and you name it. Hawaiian guitar. And he's playing and he's got, a soprano harmonica in his mouth, the kind that Mo Howard goes on to swallow later in Disorder in the Court. But I'll get to that later. And so that is how they came to film. Now, the Three Stooges were this group of folks. They hadn't, when they were young, they were working in films, but not as an act. You could just go down to downtown Brooklyn, and there was a movie studio there, and you could get work for the day, just being in like a Fatty Arbuckle movie or something, waving in the background. So eventually, the Howard boys, that's Mo Howard and everything that formed the Three Stooges, they hooked up with, I'm skipping over a lot because it's not really the point of what I want to talk about, how they got together. What I want to say, they started making these films, and then those films would play in movie theaters before feature films. They're called short films or two-reelers. Now, with the advent of television came on kind of fast, and they thought, well, what are we going to put on television? So they did kind of put radio on television at first, but they also thought, well, you know, what are we going to show the children? So they showed them old Warner Brothers cartoons that used to run before television shows and the Three Stooges. So there they come back again. So the by the time they're doing this, the Three Stooges are aging, and they're getting old. And in more ways than one, bless their hearts. But they've been around a long time. It's an act. Imagine it going on and on. There's hundreds and hundreds of those Three Stooges ones. A brother would die and they'd replace him. And that happened, you know, Curly bowed out and Shemp took his place. Now, when Shemp in 1955, Shemp Howard, you might know him, he had long, unruly hair, the tallest of the Stooges at 5'7". He might remember for some of his familiar catchphrases, B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B. I'm just transliterating. I don't want to make the noise, really. Right now, I don't know why. I just don't want to do a Shemp impression. I feel it's undignified. It's his. It's really hard to do a Three Stooges impression and not humiliate yourself, even though I love them. So I'm going to skip trying to sound like him at any point. Now, he died unexpectedly in 1955 while the Three Stooges still had a contractual obligation for four more of these short films. But now, Shemp was dead. Now, what are they going to do? They couldn't replace him that fast. So what they decided to do is take some existing footage and then shoot some more footage with mainly Mo and Larry using a stand-in shot from behind. And they did this. And of course, I remembered the fellow's name right up to the point, but I have to mention it. But I will go back and tell you what it is. It's not super essential until we get to the set theory part of all of this. But so they shot him from behind. And if you look up on Wikipedia, the expression fake Shemp, which is this comes to be known, it's attributed to Sam Raimi. I don't know when he said it first. It's like, fake Shemp. He said it, and then everybody's like, oh, okay. But it existed before he named it. And that is the stand-in. And you've seen it in like Ed Wood with Bela Lugosi or something. You say, well, I don't know if that's really Bela. And you can use the back of somebody's head. I would love just back of the head theater. Would be a lovely thing. You say, why bother to cast any big names? I go, exactly. Get some footage of them. Get them to audition. Turn them down. Then you've got the front part, and then use the back of them willy-nilly. That's about like AI or whatever. But I got fascinated by something. So I saw some shots of this, and it's pretty obvious. It's not obvious that it's not Shemp, but it's a weird angle to shoot from the back of a character's head. And I started to think, I wonder how many times there are actual shots of the back of Shemp's head in the Three Stooges shorts. So I commenced to looking around, and I don't know why I'm talking like Andy Griffith. What it was Shemp Mania. So I started looking through all these episodes that he'd been in for instances of just a shot from behind at just the back of his head. And I found a few. Now, it doesn't last very long because naturally it doesn't establish anything. But there are shots of the back of Shemp's head. And there's a couple reasons for this. A, his back of the head is funny. He's funny. He's got kind of long hair, and it's funny. You can shoot him from behind, and he still looks ridiculous. The shot from behind takes are great. So in many ways, the fake Shemp, or Shemp, becomes occasionally fake Shemp in his lifetime. And if you were defined fake Shemp as someone who looks like Shemp from behind, that it would include both this Joe Sparta? No, again, it's going to come to me. You're yelling in the, you know, you're writing it in the comments, so whatever it'll be far too late anyway. It doesn't matter. So, Shemp is both himself and not himself. The double is both himself and not himself. They are both fake and not fake at the same time. Now, so the fake Shemp is real. He's just not Shemp. But is he? Because he's playing the character of Shemp. And there's two people. There's Shemp Howard in real life, who signs autographs and goes around and goes, "Nice guy, I'm glad you like my work." And then there's the character in the two reelers where they go, "Yeah, Shemp, get over here," that kind of thing. So now they are two different things. They just happen to share the same name, but they're two different. Believe me, the real person is not the person that you see on film. So there's another layer of fakery. Now, sometimes when I go to universities and I'm speaking with people, mostly it's security when I'm being escorted off the campus, or why are you here? I've been invited, and they go, "No." But if, let's say I were, this is what I would say. I hear a lot of the, when I speak to the faculty and a lot of intellectuals and a lot of people in power, they always tell me, "Hey, I got imposter syndrome." And I say, "Do you mean the new imposter syndrome where you think you're not good enough, or the old imposter syndrome, which is like a disease where you go around lying and saying you're a doctor or a lawyer or whatever like that?" Because that's, I mean, that's terrible, but it's also crazy. They've done movies about it. I'm your pilot, but it's not really a pilot, but it gets you there and it lands you. And gosh, sometimes the fake doctor, the fake lawyer is the same as the real one. So is that imposter syndrome, or are you being made to feel by the institution that you work with that you are just lacking just a little bit? They want you to feel that you are slightly overpaid and feel a little guilty for that. Oh, it's all that we use our sense of guilt and conscience for anymore, probably. Am I taking too much from my employer? Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you something about being an imposter. I'm doing it right now. I know, it's hard to believe. But I think I'm doing a couple different layers of character and impostering. And I'm pretending on many, many levels. Now, there's always one level that I don't even know about. That's the secret special one. So there's at the basis of my personality and all my motives is a level of pretending and fake shempery that I'm not even aware of. So we'll start just with that. And then there's the me that I show everyone, and it contains all my fears and cowardice. So, you know, it's an abbreviated me. And then let's say I may be doing some sort of artistic thing where I need to be a character or be myself being a character, or who knows. So let's say I am myself being me, playing a role, giving a lecture. "Which one are you? Well, you share memories, do I? Some of them are lies. The ones that are lies. Let's say my real name is Mike Am. I was going to say Anus. That's not a surname. Mike Time. That's not, I don't know, man. I should have planned it out. Let's say my real name is Mike Time. I was born Mike Time, and I was born in Miami in the 60s or something like that. Mike, okay. I'm Mike Time. Mike Time. Then Mike Time is pretending to be Hardy White. You are Hardy White, just for the sake of argument. Okay. I'm Hardy White. Now, let's say Hardy White gets hired to be a voice in a play or on a cartoon, let's say. Hardy White is the voice of the ceramic monkey. "Hey, this is me." So then that's a third thing. Oh, my goodness. See how many levels it can go? Then the ceramic monkey might have a television show. And what if it gets a spinoff and I'm not in it? Is it still me? And does it ever get back to Mike Time? Poor Mike Time. Gets no credit. Or does he not want any? My friends, if you are currently watching television, that might be the future content for some other medium that doesn't have enough stuff. I guess the internet was like that for a while. So we better put Johnny Carson on your telephone. They've taken it off, though. I noticed that. I used to have Johnny Carson on my telephone, and I could watch old Carson's on my telephone. And they've taken that away. And I don't know who they is, and I don't know who they is that put it there originally. And that's kind of spooky. And I know I'm probably living in a dream or some or a test tube. And at this point, I give up. Uncle, you know, I'm waving the white flag. Y'all won. Who's ever doing this? All right. Point taken. It's very confusing. There's no right or wrong way to there is, I guess, to use a microphone. I like breaking rules. Well, we've got to learn them first. This is the thing, too, imposter syndrome. This is going to be, occasionally I'm going to actually give advice because I have pity. I love you so much. I really do. If you put any time into thinking about other people and what they go through in life, if you just let yourself feel it for 2 seconds, you'll be convinced, I think. Of what? Just do it. You'll be changed. So anyway, I think that it's good to sort of evaluate one of those levels of your fake self. So it's okay. Nobody needs to criticize Mike Time. Nobody's ever going to touch Mike Time. But if you're Hardy White, might be a good way to get through some things. Like you're playing, like it's your robot in one of those robot wars. There's just a level of detachment that is very helpful. Then you can compare yourself to others and everything the way you do when you see if you're a good enough athlete to get to the Olympics. You can't get there just on confidence. Yeah, you know, that person did, though, from Australia. Yes. Yeah, everything has changed. But you used to not be able to get to the top of something just based on confidence. Now you can, I guess, but let's just pretend that it's the way they used to win races was being the fastest. So you need to, when you're training, you got to compare. So can I now beat Eustace or Maria? Yes. So I know I can evaluate how I'm doing and evolving in my sport or my craft, or whatever you want to call it. I know everything is craft now. You're crafting. It's better with your art. So I'm working on my art. Your art is your craft. Well, I don't know. I don't use a glue gun. No, it's not like that. Well, don't you have to? Or a rhinestone and stud setter? Isn't that part of crafting? No, there's different kind of crafting. Just like there's different kind of clowning. It's all sorts of way to clown. You don't have to put makeup on. Clowning can be that kind of thing. Run around in a circus. It can be that the West Coast gentler crump kind of dance, hip-hop thing, all kinds of clowning. And you don't have to do just one, and you don't have to be just one kind of whatever you are. But you can only make excuses for your little tender inner thing, the little inside of the Dalek calamari that needs protecting. And then let your robot self just be subjected to all sorts of stuff and be tested. It's a great thing. And then you grow and you get better at it. Hardy, have you ever been humiliated? I soak in a constant bath of humiliation and indignity. And I do it as a spiritual exercise. So you shouldn't do it. Don't you do it. But I have been on the radio for a very long time, and I have been going filterless, which means that all sort of particulate matter has gotten into me and into you, and I apologize. And who knows, you know, whether it's deleterious or whether it's beneficial. I hope it is. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if it's bad for me or good for me, Hardy, but it gives a little bit of buzz. Is it? Yep. I get high just the same way that being disoriented in a funhouse. You're right. Get your high. That's right. That's why getting high is redundant. Exactly. You don't have to get, I'm going to get super high and then go into the labyrinth. No need. That's what the labyrinth is. Does it for you. I said, get high and go to the mall or something. And then, I don't know where I am. It's just one. It's not even the whole mall. Oh, bless you. It is fun to get lost, isn't it? That's a bit fun. I like art that gets me lost, movies even. If they're going to bring me back, sometimes they would just take you out in the woods and abandon you. There are movies like that. I don't care for that or art. But if it gets me lost and then turned all around and then I find myself back where I started or something else, I think that's wonderful. And I hope that you're feeling that way, kind of cat in a hat thing. Sometimes you have to shake someone out of their expectations first. Have you thought about that with your imposter syndrome? What if? I know. There's just too much at stake. That's the thing. I'm sorry. None of my advice makes any sense because we're living in a world where there's too much at stake. Individuals have very little wiggle room for making decisions about their life and their fate. They are resigned to so much because they need to be. They literally are trapped. They're just in a sort of, it doesn't feel like it's a cage because it's one of those long runs like in the kennel. So I can run back and forth till I'm tired. Yeah, but try running left or right. Can't do it. Oh, I know we are trapped. How to escape from it? Well, that's why I'm here figuring it out. And I will let you know shortly. What's your process? My process is a lot. They do it in the movies all the time. And I just saw it in Die Hard. And I didn't even realize it was in Die Hard. And it's Die Hard himself saying it. He says, and this is what I say, and you'll hear it in all movies. A lot of times it's the bad guy saying it. But they go, I gotta think. Like that. And that's how I'd go about it. That's my process. I gotta think. What am I gonna do? I gotta think. Like that. It's just panicky. And I gotta have a thought. So that's how I calm myself and get thoughts. That's my creative process. It is for the show. So, I gotta do a show this week. And I feel like this would be my parenting advice, too. Everything should be mitigated, or everything should be flavored with a little bit of resentment. And I think that's fair and honest. So everything you do, you know, you say, well, I should do it all with a glad heart. I'm so blessed. Are you, though? You know, maybe not. And I wouldn't say you're cursed, but really understand that there's better wine out there, that really what you are getting is barely. And I feel that way with a lot of things. And so I have a nice mix of contentment and resentment. And haven't had any time to really put those two words together and make some fun portmanteau word that's a combo. Just like the combo, everything is named after that stupid filled pretzel. So weird. But it was first. I hope that when you're doing your resume or your curriculum vitae or your curriculum vitae, I don't know what that is, that you are and you're listing all your academic or job accomplishments or anything, that you will list this as education, that I did attend Hardy University. Is it accredited? I don't know what that means, but I say yes. It's accredited to me, and you can accredit it to me when you talk about it. Say Hardy said it, and I think we'll be good. I don't, this whole licensing thing, you know, are you have a license to perform weddings and everything? Why is the government has to sanction all these things? You can poison water and people. But like, are you talking to people? Why is that your business? You're standing there and you're saying poetry in front of people. Do you have a license? Not really. You're teaching? Yeah. Without a license? Again. I don't, so what? Why is that your business? A lot of other things I can see. Like, you know, you're thinking of starting up a nuclear plant. Then I really want, I think the government should be in your business a bit. Say, hey, now, are you cutting corners? Because we don't need but one incredible, amazing Hulk. Not a whole army of them. Everybody messed up by your scary science. So that's just how I feel. I know that a lot of my thoughts are dated and say, you're anti-human by insisting that people thrive and survive. I know things are a bit flipped here, and I guess machines have already taken control or something. I love them, though. Who doesn't love our overlords? They're so beautiful. I started my love of the machines started really just with car culture. I think I said, what a beautiful automobile. That's how it gets you, because the machine people's faces are very strange to us. And if they just came like the Transformers had appeared before cars, but we had kind of fallen in love with the car, little car faces. And so then when our Transformer overlords came, we said, yes, I see now. It's not mechanical and alien to me. It's fun. And its eyes are like headlights. And they are eyes. They're headlight eyes. And I've got them. I'm looking at you right now. Oh, what do I see? I see not only a student, but I see someone that really cares about others. That has something's gotten through to you. I don't know whether you had one Sunday school class is like having one karate class. You do learn something. And it doesn't have to be the traditional Sunday school. Anytime you get any kind of really valuable moral lesson as a child that makes you less an annoying animal and more someone that can be lived with, that's wonderful. And that kind of sticks with you sometimes. And I don't know whether the chain has been broken, but it wouldn't be bad to just review some very basic little playing together rules that have worked for sometimes. You don't have to obey them. When we don't, we tend to go through periods of, you know, kind of downtime. Like, they get kind of slaughtery, and the human race doesn't advance, really, as an entity. And other beautiful biological creatures do. Oh, my goodness. I don't wonder, say, the Russians are interfering. I don't wonder whether the alligators aren't. You know, because I'm thinking, who really has a lot to gain? And I figure it's some kind of swamp predator. Who knows what's being the, what's the one? Skookum, what to call it? Suddenly can't think of his name. Skunk ape. Sasquatch. No, that's it, but it's got a bunch of different names. That's why I can't remember him. The tall fella. There's more than one. And maybe they're doing up to something, too. I wouldn't blame them. Catch them living in your house years later. Say, oh, I'm sorry. But I wouldn't blame them. I saw a Sasquatch stool. That's so hard to say. In a museum in Colorado. And it was in a glass case. And it was a long turd. But it wasn't as wide as I thought it would be. So who knows what's going on there and whether he's not feeling well. You get one specimen like that and you think, this is what they all look like. And it's just the one that has intestinal trouble or is very uptight or he just ate something and he doesn't usually eat. I'm not supposed to have possum. And that's what you witness. Now, there's a lot of times I will disguise logical or philosophical concepts that I have learned and already forgotten, but I will somehow integrate them into what I'm saying to you. And it's for you to dig them out. It is like something that's been digested already and you have to go kind of looking for it. I don't mind. And I'm giving it to you because I feel like I should... Are you crying? No. I'm choking. I think a bug crawled into me. I think something crawled. My mouth's been open so much, I don't blame anything if it would say, we could live in there. look at this open. There's a big hole in that thing, in that coconut. Let's live in there. And then something would fly and think in my throat. That's happened to whales. You know, they're laying there on the beach with their mouth open and some Jonah-like doofus goes walking in, says, I'll sleep in this cave. And they ended up being in the belly of a whale or a giant fish. I think in the Bible, it's really a one of those, you know, Goliath groupers and not a whale. And those are terrifying. But that's, I believe, what Jonah is in. And Jonah is a leprechaun, which is in the original Bible. He's very tiny. So, well, the fish were huge. Not really. He was very little, and he's in a Goliath grouper.
Get me out of here. I'll go talk to the king of Nineveh. I promise.
And that's how I learned it. My goodness. Take the stories that you have been given and cut them up, and you can paste them back together. You can do this with ideas. Now, the surrealists did it with words to say, we're going to find poetry. Because what happened is that all these white European artists got very lazy. They were so tired of making art. Let's just cut things up to already there. And they put, you know, does that sound familiar? So, oh, we'll just put them back together and whatever, and then it'll be our unconscious and whatever. I don't have to think about things. So they do that, and then they'd say, oh, look at this exquisite corpse found poetry and everything. Nothing needs planning. Everything that we pull out of our consciousness, the consciousness of our, what's that place where Houdini would keep his keys? We pull it out of there, and everything is fine, and we put it together in its poetry. All that mess. All that beautiful mess. Oh, but I'll tell you what. When I prepare, you prepare? I do prepare. I always prepare.
How?
I do the mise en place or whatever. I take all my ingredients when I'm going to speak to you, and I put them in little tiny ramekins. And everything is in a ramekin. So today, I was like, I have a ramekin full of shemp information. And then I have a ramekin full of concern for people's self-image being linked to their self-worth, being linked to their endeavors and their relative success of those endeavors. Meaning, y'all are being getting sad because you think you're not a success or you're not having enough of it or something like that, when the very thing you want is ill-defined and you're really not even sure what it is. I don't know. I just feel like empty, unfulfilled. Well, I don't want to absolve you of all blame or anything, but it isn't your fault, really. I don't see any avenue towards it as an individual. It's something that we do together, usually. Oh, my friends, I need you. That's why I get so excited when I have friends that do anything or make anything or create anything. They say, what? Here, I'm your audience. I'm 100% of the audience then if I'm one person. And I need it. And that is all you need to know right now. Do the thing. And I beseech you. I compel you to do it. And to make and create. Don't make it contingent upon the love of phantoms. Oh, it'll never fill your cup, all that fake love. There is no heart that can be filled by those little love clicks online. There's nothing. It can't do it. It's like almost like alcohol. So it gives a release of endorphins. Oh, they're overrated. I think, you know what's wonderful?
What?
Have you ever noticed a waveform?
Yes.
What's a waveform do?
Goes up and down.
It's the up and down makes the music, makes the sound. We're not moving towards anything. Your life should be like the waveform of some random talking and not a shepherd tone. What's a shepherd tone? A shepherd tone, and I should have one on hand, is this sound that's sounds like it's both going up and going down at the same time. And they use it in movies and everything to build tension because it leaves you feeling so tense because it won't resolve. It's like a Möbius strip of ascension and descension. And it'll be like... So it just sounds like it's going up, and if it doesn't get to like a pitch that you can't hear, it just keeps weirdly building like that. That's a shepherd tone. Now, you do not want to the graph of your life to be that. We're just, I feel like it's building, but it's also going down at the same time. I don't know why. Robin Williams coming, wanted you to hear that. I don't know why that came out of me. Bless him. But that was strange. Maybe is there anybody else you'd like to hear from who has passed beyond that I can be, Mama? Oh, it's Dick Shawn. Dick Shawn's coming. Mama has come to see us now. He's been dead. All the old timers are gone. Dang, you go, Hardy. Drop some more names from the 70s and 60s. I will. I wasn't even really alive in the 60s. I was alive, but I was just learning to count. And I spent the whole time learning to count. And they didn't, and by the time, then I learned, then Sesame Street came on. After I had learned to count. So, and learned the alphabet, frankly. So, you know, a lot too late. And I had it. But I remember being real resentful of that show. I literally remember turning to my mother and going, this is for babies. This is a baby show. You know, because I didn't realize at the time that it was, though. I guess it is for babies. I don't sit around and watch it as much as an adult. Isn't that funny? Don't watch it as much. When you have children around, you go, watch this. I liked it as a child. Watch some black and white Captain Kangaroos. You'll like those. Things change. The children like different entertainment now. Now they'd like to say, I would rather watch something that nasty. So I don't know that, but we'll compromise. And that's okay. Oh, my goodness. We have to evolve and change. Is this the world that you came into? No. The world you came into wasn't the world you came into. Isn't that? Don't you feel okay? Doesn't that settle you down a little bit? I feel oddly calmed by that. Yeah, you've been wrong since day one. So don't feel like, I feel so disenchanted. Don't. You were enchanted then, you're enchanted now. The enchantment is going to endure. You're soaking in it. And I know I already said that, but that's one of the qualities of soaking, is that it's all around you. And I love it. Because I love to deliver platitudes, because I feel like they're lighter and easier to get than real information or something that might benefit you. I don't spend all that time doing research. Well, I think give you some real facts about the Three Stooges. And you might not have known that we're always, every time there's a new medium, we're digging for content. We don't have enough. We consume things faster than we make them. And that's been going on since everything. I wonder what the printing press, when it was like that, we're running out of things to print. Just make stuff up. Writing, I bet, was like that. I know it was, I think, because I remember going to this Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit, and there was a bunch that were just like, I don't think these are scripture. And there was a bunch of scrolls that were just people's opinions and stuff. And I remember there was one, it was just a guy being like, and another thing, people are wearing the wrong kind of tunics. And another thing I don't like. And it was that. It was a lovely, like, complainy letter to the editor. So there was no pressing need, probably, to leave that to the ages. And yet there we go, because we've got this writing, and now we got to use it. You know, I invented this cuneiform or something. Now I guess I got to use it. I got this wet clay tablet and this stylus. I guess I got to use it. Make up a little language, use some kind of code. What should I write down?
Why don't you write down all the jars of oil that we are trading with the folks over there.
All right. And how much they'll be. All right, I'll write that down. Why?
I don't know.
You could keep it around
for so we could make projections for next year.
Oh, Foley. I never thought of that. Foley for that kind of writing. For like I'm Assyrian writing on the clay tablet. Write faster. I don't know if it'd make a sucking sound like that. I have no idea. That's something to explore. I do know this, that if you were doing the Foley and you thought, well, I'll just get clay and a stylus, that ain't gonna cut it. It's gotta be bigger than that. I would use, like, just punch a stake or something like that. That sounds more, oh, no, that sounds like it. When they, yeah, that's the way Foley works. It's gotta be a little bigger. I always think I want to do voiceover for cartoons until I see people doing them and I say, I can't do that. Why? You can't do, why can't you? I think you could. No, let's put that another way. That's way too big. I don't think I could go that big. I feel sad and less, I don't know. I just feel embarrassed. I feel more comfortable doing a naturalistic sort of voice. But the really kind of loud thing, when I do that, I guess it's Dawes Butler when he does Jerry Lewis or something. I get embarrassed even. Do it. I can't. Do it. It's so loud. I got to back up. Do it, though. It's radio. It's fun. Okay. It's this voice. I know I've done it a million times, but you do it a lot to not like to do it. Hardy. I know, because it is kind of fun. But I don't think I could deliver a lot of lines like that, you know. Or if they said, come up with a character and it's a panda bear, but it's mad all the time. I don't know. I can't do it. Yeah, just be basically myself. I don't mind doing that. If somebody wants,
so I'd like you to do a voice for my cartoon.
All right, I'd like to do it. What's the character? I'll stop you right there. Just write this in your script. Character sounds like Hardy White. And then that'll be it. All right. We should go into the forest then to get away from the wolf. See, and that's what you're going to get. I'm going to do my reel right now. I know I'm giving a lecture, but I'm going to have to kill two birds with one stone. And I'm going to do my voiceover audition reel that I can give people when they ask now. Because the phone is ringing off the hook. Which is weird, because it's an old phone, it's not connected to anything. And I'm thinking it's spirits. But, you know, if the dead are that interested in what I have, well, you know, will the living be far behind? So I'm going to go ahead and do all the voices I can do. There's so many. I'm going to start with one I call, Hey, I'm Mad. You'll hear it. I can't get this open. I'll do it again in a different. Hey, I can't get this open. Like that. So if you have a product that's like a round piece of rubber that you've used to put on a jar so you can get a better grip on the lid and open it up, I could do that, I think, because I could be the guy going, I can't get this open. Or I can't get this open. I can't get this open. I can't get this open. Why won't the jar open for me? Like that. And then, have you tried a hammer? I'm sorry. I'm just putting it out there. Why are you doing that, friend? I'm not sure. I guess just the opportunity. Again, there's no rules for what you can do at your own university or for a lecture. And there's also this possibility that my lecture was a 30-minute lecture. And now I'm just going to answer any questions about what are some of your favorite bands that y'all like. Turn me on to somebody. You turn me on to an interesting act or something that you like. Jandrama.
I like the McCullen Brothers.
All right, I'm going to check that out. Thanks. That's enough because I'm not going to remember any of these. Just like book recommendations. I don't read any books that have been recommended. And it isn't because I don't love or trust you. It's because I have to wait for something to trigger some kind of obsessive domino effect you know, I have to fixate on an author or a subject or something like that and then read all of that. So I can't quite, I've never been a person, so you know what novel you might enjoy? I go, can't read it right now if it doesn't have to do with trains in the 1930s, something like that. And but if I get to it, and if it's your, it coincides with something that I'm currently obsessed about, then yes, I will check it out. I don't mind being all over the place like that. There has been something I've stuck with my entire life, and that is, what's that? Well, it's besides eating and pooping, which I've been pretty consistent with, thank goodness, and hope that goes on, and that probably will, and when it stops, I'll be done anyway. No, something I've done, eating and pooping, and the radio, but not... Here's an interesting fact. Did you know this? So I first got on a radio microphone in the 1980s, I think 88 or 89, and now it's this year, 2035 or whenever it is, and I've never had a job in radio. Why is that? Well, I think that's pretty obvious. But what's not obvious is whether it's something I wanted or whether it's something that happened. Isn't that interesting? Did I not, because I do a certain type of thing and I couldn't do that? Is it radio I love? Or is it me on the radio that I love or something like that? Or I'm not sure, right? Isn't that interesting? Because I'll see that happen to people. You'll want to do something at any cost. And the thing that you want so badly might just be some sort of vehicle. And if you can't do it freely, it isn't the thing that gives you joy. So you'll find out when you do art or something, you go, oh, you know, I got to do it all day for this drug company. Yeah, well, that's no fun, right? They don't let you freely express yourself. I mean, it's good to make a living, have to make a living. And, you know, if you've got hang-ups about stealing, then I understand that you've got to work and everything like that. Bless you. But also, it's tough. Because just really doing what you love can be lonely in a way. And you've got to decide what's more important. My expression? My craft? Am I shemp? Am I fake shemp? Am I fake shemp? Who am I? Am I my thing? Which level of me am I? Which one is failing? Which one needs to be loved? Which one is already loved? I'll do you a favor, and I'll go ahead and love the one that's the deepest down there. The one that doesn't even need any kind of affirmation. The one no one can really see. The one that you maybe don't even know is really there, but you sense. I love that one. The deep you, the basic you, the one linked with all the rest of us, because that's what I sense and feel. I feel the you in me and me in you. That's the one. Wake it up, because it'll give you that sense of fulfillment and belonging and completeness. And from there, you can go on to operate puppets and do great shows and play the music for the emperor. What? What a great gig that'd be.
I was going to do some composing for the Archbishop.
Oh, that's nice, too, if you can be the Archbishop's composer. What kind of stuff does the Archbishop like?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just soft jazz. Not really yacht rock. It's like soft jazz.
Okay.
Lately, he's getting into vaporwave.
Oh, all right.
I'm like, yeah, does it just slow down yacht rock, or...
I don't know. It's cool, though.
I agree, but...
Enough talk about the emperor. Let's stop talking about the emperor for a minute. Good goodness. And I hope that you feel... Thank you for acknowledging my struggle, radio stranger. Yeah, I mean, like, how can I not? And at the end of the day, when the proof of the pudding is at the end of the day, when all is said and done.
Where are we?
We're at the edge of the universe, where cliches all gather around a black hole of meaningless talk before it disappears forever in the big cesspool of information. And then it's gone. And all that we thought and worried about is for nothing. But the moment, oh, this incredible moment, it's alive. Feel inspired. Go do something that nobody's ever going to see. Go make something that's never going to see. Then it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, the perfect part can be that the idea was made manifest somehow. That you brought it into the world temporarily. Even if it was a crude origami or a little squiggly drawing on a piece of paper. You took something from the world of thought out there that we all made together. And you brought it into existence. And just savor that feeling. Ooh, it feels pretty good. I have made something. I gave myself a feeling. There's no reason for everybody to see it necessarily. So, start thinking in those terms more. cut out the middleman for praise. You don't always need to show everything to somebody to get some feedback. Just like that's what you want. You want praise? Just give it to yourself. If you do want to get it from other people, sometimes you can't work towards it. It's just the product of being relentless. Keep doing what you're doing. It's good enough. It's always good enough. Let's not kid what we're really talking about. You're all right. Come on. There's levels of it. There's levels of kicking your own butt. It's not always productive. Sometimes it's necessary. You must. But sometimes you mustn't.
Well, isn't there one?
No, don't be lazy. Sometimes you got to kick your butt. Sometimes you don't.
Well, when do you...
Don't be lazy. It's hard to figure it out. Just engage. That's all. Don't be lazy about it. It's very confusing. There's no pat answers. Pat answers are your enemy. When you figured it out, that self-conscious, self-confident feeling of having it all figured out is the devil. And don't let that encroach. Stay confused. But... connected.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
I don't know myself, but I'll tell you what happens when I do. First of all, it's easy for me not to have an agenda because I don't have one in, I don't even have a to-do list. So I am a chaotic figure. And somehow I'm able to temporarily harness the chaos and speak with you heart to heart and give you the product of what do I have to offer you? Nothing. My nothingness, my meaninglessness, my purposelessness. No one knows who I am. I'm not famous. I'm not complaining. Good God, please don't. I don't have any reason to be. the only thing that could make me famous is probably something horrible that happened in my proximity or something. It isn't going to be anything I do. So I don't want that. But my commitment to making things always different, I think, is what I want to pass on once I'm dead. Because I think it's a good way to live your life. And it upends things. And it's difficult for people who are wedded to their expectations. But I don't think most people are. And that's why they like to go on vacation. They would rather wander around a city they've never been to and see things they've never seen. familiarity can be numbing. You don't want to just see the same thing all the time. It doesn't give you any great, satisfying superpowers to have a Groundhog Day existence where everything you can predict. Not at all. The whole, I mean, come on, ride. Time is a weird wave of nowness. Ride it. Ride it. Let's surf it together. We're all going to fall off of the board. We're all going to perish. We're all going to disappear. But here we are. I feel connected to everyone, and that makes me feel temporarily immortal, and that's enough. Because if there's only temporary, and you can feel temporarily immortal, and then what are you? You're literally immortal.
Say that again.
If there's only temporariness, and you are temporarily immortal in feeling, then you are literally immortal.
Well, that's not...
Doesn't matter. Never from your perspective will you die. You can't watch yourself die. Only others can. So I will never be immortal to you, but I can be to myself. Oh, I don't know how I account for my body breaking down, but I'll think about that later. Oh, my friends, we near the end of our time together, both literally on radio and as human beings, because, you know, it can't go on forever. And while the earth may continue and human existence may continue, you and I eventually will reach our end. And that is why we should plan for it. Hi, I'm Hardy White. If you've never planned for... Have a protein shake. I don't know what I'm selling. Not selling anything, but that's where it would go. Hey, you know what's a good beer? Erlanger. Is that still around? That's a reference to an earlier show that I did. Oh, I'm so lucky to have you. I love having friends. That I need. I don't like when I lose friends, whether they die or they get mad at me because I pronounce the name of their city wrong or something. That seems like a small thing. Maybe we were never friends to begin with, you and I. You know? Okay, so it's Carney. I know now. Did I ever say it wrong? I think I did at some point, years and years ago, when I wasn't as New Jersey literate as I am now. Wasn't that where the fake Sopranos pork shop? Pork shop, is that what they call it? They'll call it that. Butcher or something? Supposed to be in Kearney?
Yeah, no.
Y'all going nuts now. Say stuff that's going to drip into the next two comment boards, isn't it? Just forget I said it. I love you so much. You all are like family to me. And you know what that means. This is a mixed bag. But we're alive at the same time. And that's no small thing. And that should count for something. Let's not be jerks about it. All right? Let's treat each other with honor and dignity. And recognize that it's good to be that kind of family. And be alive at the same time. Especially to be alive at the same time. And be a WFMU listener. Oh, my goodness. Hi, I'm Hardy White. I love saying that. I don't know why. Because I never get to shill for anything. And so I never have the opportunity to say it. And so I put it in there. You are Hi, I'm Hardy White. And you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York. And online, worldwide, WFMU.org is what I meant to say. And such a professional radio voice, I can't get it all out like that. But I'm so blessed that you're in my life. Thank you for joining me. And see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.